a little more relaxed this time of year. We are in our Christmas at Life Point season, and we want to just celebrate every Advent Sunday that we have, and so we've taken a little more of a relaxed approach. And last week, Nadine led us into this season and did a great job, so the bar is high. So just bear with us. But so we'll sit down, just sit that back and relax yourself. We hope that this would be an encouragement conversation to you guys. Real briefly, my name is Nat Wibberly, for those of those that have not met, I haven't met yet. And you met my wife, my wonderful wife, Abby. And we came to Germany in 2020, right during the pandemic, which is, when you think about the song we just wrote, God does miracles, right? He does miracles, and the fact that we even were able to come to Germany during that time and see this church be planted wasn't a real miracle. So it was a crazy time. So, but we've been here since 2020, planted Life Point in 2022. We've been meeting here since then as well. And so we are an international church. And our motto is we build bridges. Our goal is to build bridges not only between God and people, but between people as well, especially people from different cultural backgrounds. That stems from the fact that I grew up as an MK in Turkey. My parents were missionaries there for many years. And Abby and I actually met in Turkey, and we served there for, I think, 12 years together as a couple. So, that's an extensive part of our identity, is to build cultural bridges, to do cross-cultural ministry. And so that's kind of what is in the DNA of Life Point Church, is we want to be a place where cultures come together. So welcome. With that being said, is there anything you want to add to it? Are you on?
No.
Okay. Very important. Last week, Nadine led us into this Advent time, speaking about hope. So every Advent Sunday has a different theme. And today we'd like to talk about peace, about what peace is and what it means for us. And we want to start with a video about peace. So is the sound up? You guys can play it if you like.
The word peace is common in most languages. People can talk about peace treaties or times of peace. It means the absence of war. And in the Bible, the word peace can refer to the absence of conflict, but it also points to the presence of something better in its place. In the Old Testament, the Hebrew word for peace is shalom. And in the New Testament, the Greek word is eirene. The most basic meaning of shalom is complete or whole. The word can refer to a stone that has a perfect, whole shape with no cracks. It can also refer to a completed stone wall that has no gaps and no missing bricks. Shalom refers to something that's complex with lots of pieces that's in a state of completeness, wholeness. It's like Job, who says his tents are in a state of shalom because he counted his flock and no animals are missing. This is why shalom can refer to a person's well-being. Like when David visited his brothers on the battlefield, he asked about their shalom. The core idea is that life is complex, full of moving parts and relationships and situations, and when any of these is out of alignment or missing, your shalom breaks down. Life is no longer whole, it needs to be restored. In fact, that's the basic meaning of shalom when you use it as a verb. To bring shalom literally means to make complete or restore. So Solomon brings shalom to the unfinished temple when he completes it. Or if your animal accidentally damages your neighbor's field, you shalom them by giving them a complete repayment for their loss. You take what's missing and you restore it to wholeness. The same goes for human relationships. In the book of Proverbs, to reconcile and heal a broken relationship is to bring shalom. And when rival kingdoms make shalom in the Bible, it doesn't just mean they stop fighting, it also means they start working together for each other's benefit. This state of shalom is what Israel's kings were supposed to cultivate, and it rarely happened. So the prophet Isaiah, he looked forward to a future king, a prince of shalom, and his reign would bring shalom with no end. A time when God would make a covenant of shalom with his people and make right all wrongs and heal all that's been broken. This is why Jesus' birth in the New Testament was announced as the arrival of eirene. Remember, that's the Greek word for peace. Jesus came to offer his peace to others, like when he said to his followers, "My peace I give to you all." The apostles claimed that Jesus made peace between messed up humans and God when he died and rose from the dead. The idea is that he restored to wholeness the broken relationship between humans and their creator. This is why the Apostle Paul can say Jesus himself is our Eirene. He was the whole complete human that I am made to be but have failed to be. And now he gives me his life as a gift. And this means that Jesus' followers are now called to create peace. Paul instructed local churches to keep their unity through the bond of peace, which requires humility and patience and bearing with others in love. Becoming people of peace means participating in the life of Jesus, who reconciled all things in heaven on earth, restoring peace through his death and resurrection. So peace takes a lot of work, because it's not just the absence of conflict. True peace requires taking what's broken and restoring it to wholeness, whether it's in our lives, our relationships, or in our world. And that's the rich biblical concept of peace.
Those who probably haven't seen the video before probably had a similar reaction to it that I did when I first watched it, and that was not exactly the idea of peace that I had understood until now. I think what Abby read this morning in the introduction is kind of the idea of what we have for peace in the Western world. It's an idea of tranquility, of everything is calm, everything is cool. But here, I think it's just a much richer understanding of what peace actually is. And just want to do a brief review. So the word for peace in Hebrew is shalom. In Greek, it's arene. And it basically refers to a completeness, a state of being where everything is in its place. And the video mentioned a couple of verses that I'd like to look at. The first one is from Joshua 8:31, where he talked about the altar stone, which was basically without blemish. It says, he followed the commands that Moses, the Lord, the servant, had written in the book of instruction, that is Joshua, which was, make an altar from stones that are uncut and have not been shaped with iron tools. Now, if you think about that, why would God want uncut, unshaped stones? It reflects the restoration of God's relationship with humans, that it's based on, we want to make this complete. So it was a visual representation, actually, for the people back then, that this is an altar of peace. It's an altar of restoration. And that's really what it is about. It's to make complete or restore. That's what peace is to fix what is broken, is to restore. And in that sense, that is why Jesus is called the Prince of Peace, the Prince of Shalom. What do we see here? The government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called the Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace. And it's not that he will come and bring world peace, and everybody's going to be, you know, everything's going to be tranquil. He's going to come to restore the brokenness of the world. And that is a deep concept. He came not only to give us peace as a whole, but as an individual. And he says it to in this verse. These are his words. He says, I'm leaving you with a gift, peace of mind and heart. And the peace I give is a gift the world cannot give. So don't be troubled or afraid, which I think is key. In the world, peace is about everything being calm or this tranquility we talk about, individual. But he says, I'm giving you a peace that the world cannot give you, an everlasting peace, a restoration, a state of being where everything is in its place. And another verse that stood out in this video was what Paul says about Jesus, that he is our peace. For Christ himself has brought peace, arena, to us. And we see it here. He united Jews and Gentiles, that is, different groups of people, into one people when in his own body on the cross he broke down the wall of hostility that separated us. So we often focus on what divides us as humans, right? We don't have to look far. We can just see in the narrative of the news, there's a lot of talk about racism or people groups or whatever separates people. And Jesus came to break those down. He came to restore what has been divided. And that is what peace is about. And it just doesn't stay there. He's already restored the peace in a way that he came, he died on the cross, He has fixed what is broken between God and man, but we need to, our responsibility is that we need to enter into that covenant with him. And once we do, he starts to restore us. He starts to restore our brokenness. But at the same time, he's called us to also be people who bring peace. We're called to bring peace through humility, patience, and love with each other. That is grace. Humility, patience, and love. Not saying it's my rights, even if we do have rights in that case, to not jump on the bandwagon to get justice right away, and to show kindness to people, to show love to people, to love our neighbor as ourself. That is a very hard calling. And if the church has failed throughout history, we shouldn't be surprised, because we all fail in these things. But it doesn't change the fact that the church's mission should be to be peace bringers, because that is what Jesus is. He said, I will build my church. And he is the head of the church. And if he's the Prince of Shalom, the Prince of Peace, we are called to be ambassadors of peace. Now, these are all great points, but I want to bring it home. So what does something like this look like in real life? And as I mentioned, we were church planters for many years in Turkey, and we met a lot of people while we were there. We got to know some pretty cool people. And one of my favorite people from there is a friend of mine called Shahin. So, which means hawk or falcon, whichever one you want to translate. But here we are. This is me like 16 years ago. I don't know if you'd want to plant a church with somebody that looks like that, but this is me and Shahin goofing off at a party. Here's a better picture of us. This is what we were like when we got to know each other. And yeah, we were kids, man. We were just kids. Look at this, look, fresh-faced. We really hit it off. Now, Shahin grew up in a broken home. Talk about peace. Grew up in a broken home. His father abandoned his mom when he was really young. He didn't even get to know his father until he was a teenager. And his mother did her best to raise him. She sent him to a boarding school in another city because he was such an unruly kid. And this boarding school happened to be a religious boarding school, a Muslim boarding school. And he has all kinds of stories about what that was like. But instead of embracing the religion, he rejected it because he saw a lot of violence, a lot of oppression, a lot of abuse. And they also studied the Holy Quran and the other scriptures that they had, and he did not see anything that would bring him peace in those words. And one day, he was in this other city walking with a friend, and they came across a small evangelical Turkish church. And there have been rumors about Christianity in Turkey. People knew that before Islam came, you know, the Greeks were Christians or whatever. But they knew very little about Christianity. So there's all these rumors about it. So, of course, you're curious about that thing that you don't know much about. So they went into this church to check it out. And he and his friend, of course, made fun of the whole thing. But it actually sort of spoke to Shahin some. So he took a New Testament and started reading the New Testament. And he liked what he read. He was impressed with the person of Jesus. He was impressed with what Jesus taught. He was very impressed with what he did for us. And so he ended up giving his life to Christ just by reading the New Testament. And I got to know him about a year or two after that. I think that's correct, right?
Yeah.
But he was a new Christian, a new believer, did not know what it meant to live for Christ. And so he had a lot of baggage. You know, he still had his old lifestyle going, even at this time when we got to know each other. And, you know, drinking, using soft drugs, relationships he shouldn't be in. But, you know, I just walked with him. And we ended up growing very close. And he started to come out of this funk. He started to change his life. And we walked with him even when he met his future wife. And so we got to see him get married. Here he is on his wedding day with his wife, Saadet. She's also a believer. And here we are as a young, fresh family. Is Anna in there?
She wasn't born yet.
Oh, she wasn't born yet. That's right. Yeah. This is pre-Anna. So here we are. So as you can tell, this this was a beautiful relationship. It was, you know, ever deepening. There was a sense of working together. Shine was getting into the church we were planting in the city we were in, and things were going fairly well. Mm-hmm. Until an issue came up that I felt, okay, at this point in life, we've walked this long together. I can tell you what I think about some of your decisions. And I shared my thoughts on a decision he was about to make to help secure their financial future as a family. And it didn't go well. He didn't like what I had to say. And I remember I was taking him somewhere in my car, talking to him about this. And I dropped him off and I said, I'll talk to you later. And he's like, yeah, sure. And I didn't hear from him for a year and a half after that. He just disappeared. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to say anything about that.
Yeah, at the time, we weren't living in the same building, were we? Yeah.
No, we weren't, no.
They were living about, you know, 10, 15 minutes away from us, but we met every week together, mm-hmm. and we'd have a meal together. They were newlyweds, and so we were just a step ahead of them with little kids. And that was part of, like, the discipleship process. We were just spending time with them, getting to know them better, helping them, you know, start their marriage off on the right foot in the Word, in the gospel. And so him not talking to Nat for a year and a half was more than just like, oh, you know, someone else off the street. When he says they grew close together, that last picture of just Nat and him, it was like they were very close. I'll say something before that. Yeah. Before they got married, we were already married, but we didn't have any kids. And Nat's phone would buzz in the middle of the night. Like, I don't know, middle of the night for us, it was like 1 or 2 in the morning. But for Shining, he's still awake, having a good time. He had a question about the Bible. He just called Nat. And I'm like, why is your phone ringing in the middle of the night? You know, it'd be buzzing. And he'd be like, yeah. I'm like, why are you answering it? You know, it was that kind of relationship. And he's like, no, he has a question. I'm going to answer it. And I'm like, tell him we're sleeping, you know. And it was that kind of, I always said, is that your girlfriend again? Is that your girlfriend? So it was a very close relationship. So when it got to this point where Shine got so upset, it wasn't the first time, I don't think that you guys had had little...
No, we had disagreements, yeah.
Yeah, but it was... Now, Saadet was in the picture, his wife, and we had grown close together, and the kids. And, you know, when you have little kids, they don't understand these things. So then they say, where's Shaheen? They call him Uncle Shaheen and Aunt Saadet. Where are they? How come they don't come over anymore? You know, mm-hmm. and that's hard.
Yeah.
To explain to a kid, well, they don't want to talk to us. And we didn't know how long it was going to be. Nat, you know, said it was a year and a half. But week after week, you're just like, maybe this week, you know, and just praying, maybe this week they'll come back, or, you know, and that's what I remember from the time. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, and at some points you're like, I guess we'll never be friends again, you know.
But see, that was, the shalom had been broken at that point. There was no more peace between us. And we did the only thing we knew how. We searched our hearts. We said, is there anything we did that wasn't correct? And I just thought, you know, I'll send him messages every so often just to let him know we're thinking about him. And so I would, you know, that was before we really, I think FaceTime was a thing at that time, but we would send each other text messages, and I would just text him verses or say, hey, I'm praying for your brother. He never texted back. And so we just sort of got into this new rhythm. And we just, I think we just accepted the fact that this was probably how it was going to be. The hard part, too, was he was part of the church. And to give context, you know, Turkey's a Muslim-majority country. At the time, it was 99. They estimated it was about 99.7% Muslim. So the Christian community was extremely small. And the city we were working in was one of the smaller cities, in quotes, in Turkey. It still had population over 1 million. And we were the only fellowship there. And we maybe numbered around 20 or 30 people. And there was a Turkish pastor that I was working with. And one day we sat down and just wanted to like see how many people are in our region. Because it was the city we were in was part of, was one of like 4 or 5 cities in this region. And we estimated there were about 4.5 million people in this region. And we were the only active church. Like, that's the kind of context we're in. So anybody that comes into the church and leaves the church, you feel that effect. And Shine was part of it. And he left. His wife and her, they left. They did not come to church anymore. And so it was a deep cut, you know. But we just kind of got to the point where it was like, we just kind of trust God and move on. And I think it was like in the winter, we were just kind of chilling at night one night, and I had just come home, you know, it was the end of the day, I'd gotten to my comfy clothes, when suddenly my phone rings and I looked down and it was Shaheen. I was like, oh, Shaheen's calling. So I answered the phone. I said, hey, bud, what's up? And he said, hey, I really need help. He told me that he really needed help. And could I come and get him? He had to get to the bus station and didn't have any other way. So I said, absolutely, I'll come get you. So I jumped in the car and I went and picked him up. He got in the car and, you know, it wasn't a long drive. It was maybe like 5 or 6 minute drive, but that drive's like, the whole drive, he just started talking. And he said, hey, Nat, thanks for coming. He said, you know what? I reached out to every family member I know. And he had a pretty extensive family in the city. He's like, not a single one of them wanted to help me tonight. I really have to get to the bus station. I really have to get to another city to take care of something important. Not a single person in my family was willing to take time out of their day at this hour to come get me. He said, you're the only one that did it. And he said, now I know what family is. And at that point, the shalom had returned. You know, you could feel it. And he said something he hadn't really said before, but he said, I love you. And for a macho man in the Turkish context to say that, that's a lot, you know. He said, I love you, man. So he got out. And we've been best friends ever since, like really close. It's like nothing can separate that anymore because not of what we did, we left the shalom up to Jesus. We left it up to God. We prayed for it. We prayed for him. And what happened later is a couple of years after that, we actually saw the blessing of the church that we were working on in that city be complete. Basically, when you're a church planter, the whole idea is you want to work yourself out of a job. You want to pass on your role to somebody else. And that's what happened. And so we realized our time is coming to an end in this city, which on one hand, it's a beautiful time, but it was also very hard because you start to have to say goodbye. And Shaheen and his wife Saadet came over when they realized we were going to move away. And I never saw him like this. He cried like a little kid. And he said, sorry. He said, you know that year and a half where we didn't talk? He's like, I thought of you every day. He said, I thought of you every day, and I never forgot. And that's the other side of shalom, where you see, you think this is what I'm suffering. The other side suffers too. And that's the beauty of what Jesus has brought to the world. And that's what we celebrate on this, in this season, and on this Sunday. Is there anything you want to say to that?
Yeah, I think often we think we have to do something to get peace or eliminate something from our life to get peace. And really, God is already at work, and he's created that peace. And even in the midst, you know, that was a long trial for Nat and I, a year and a half, to sit there in conflict, kind of. You know, I don't really like conflict. And always wondering it was almost like, oh, if only this relationship could get healed, then we'll have peace. But we had to live in peace every day, right? Because we had to keep going. We had children. Gave birth to another child in the amount of that time, and things were going. We were giving birth to a church. A church was growing and being born. There were other people we were walking with. And I think sometimes we forget that in the midst of crisis or difficulty, that God is repairing it. He's working on it. Mm-hmm. He's doing something because it feels uncomfortable. It feels like it's not peaceful for us in the mm-hmm. moment. But we can still have that shalom, that peace, as he's working. And I think we had to learn that. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't just constantly be upset about losing this relationship. Yeah, it was difficult. It was a struggle. But we had to keep resting in, okay, God's got this. He's working. Mm-hmm. He's doing something. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, when they came back, they actually moved into our apartment building. And we lived on the fifth floor and they lived on the third floor. And I was a little scared at first because it was like, oh, what's going to happen? Are they going to leave again or get upset again? And they moved in, and it was like the relationship just flourished even more. And we mm-hmm. were able to spend so much more time together because we literally didn't have to leave our building. And then they had two boys at the during that time, over the next few years, they had two boys of their own. And then, do you want to share this? And then they came to Germany and visited us.
They were here
last year. They've been here twice to visit us in the 5 years we've been here. And yeah, the relationship just keeps growing and God's using it. And they're ministering for the gospel. You can share what mm-hmm. he's doing there. But I think for me, what I learned out of this experience was not to give up in living in the peace of God, even though circumstances are hard. And that when he restores them, it may actually be 10,000 times better than what you think mm-hmm. if you had tried to fix it yourself.
Yeah.
And yeah, learned many things in that time, but that was one thing.
Yeah. So that's a personal story of what peace or the peace that God wants to give us that surpasses all understanding looks like. And I would like to leave you guys with a couple questions. The first one is there someone or something in your life that is in need of shalom? It's a good question to ask. Maybe there might not be, but maybe there is. Maybe there's something that is incomplete, that is, there's not, the peace isn't there and you feel it. It's a good question to ask. I always tell people when they pray to God that it's always dangerous to ask God questions like this, because usually we get an answer back that we don't want to hear. But it's like going to the doctor, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the doctor will tell us things we don't want to hear, but he tells it to us for our own good. To say, hey, if you want to live a healthy life, if you want to be strong, you need to remember these things. So is there someone or something in your life that requires some shalom? I mean, like in our case, it could be a broken relationship. It could be something that you're struggling with, an addiction and a fear or some worry. It could be wounds from the past that have never been dealt with. But these things steal our peace. They keep us from being the complete child of God that God wants us to be, or being in that process. The worst is, truly, we're never going to be complete in this world, but we should always be on that journey to becoming more and more complete. And sometimes it can get stuck at a spot. And that's what we're talking about here. Are we stuck? Are we in the constant process of growing to be more and more like our Lord? And if we're stuck, that means the shalom is missing. Which, the second question is, what must happen in order for that shalom to come to pass? Is there something you must do in order to see that happen? What I love about God is he's not an automated God. You know, he's not like a vending machine where you push a button and you get something. He wants us to participate. He's a participatory God. He's a God that wants us to go on a journey with him. And he doesn't want us to be passive. And so oftentimes when we're talking about shalom, the church is called to be bringers of peace. And each individual member of the church is meant to be a bringer of peace in their circle. And that requires us to do something. What does that look like? It can be something as simple as doing a kind favor for a person, for a stranger even. It can be something as simple as serving on a Sunday. But it can be something more deep, like I have to go at least apologize to this person, or I have to forgive them in my heart, or I need to right a wrong. It could be something more challenging in that sense. So the question is, what must happen in order for that shalom to come to pass, especially in this season? And the final thing is, ask the Prince of Peace, the shalom, to give his peace, wholeness, and healing to us. To pray that, to say, Jesus, bring me your peace. Make me whole. He will respond. He will do it. And that's what the second advent is about. It's about his peace. It's about his restoration, not only of the big problem of a lost world that really did not want anything to do with God. That always amazes me, that we are in and of ourselves would never have chosen, even though we knew Jesus and God is the source of life, we would never have chosen him on our own. He had to come into our world. He had to essentially convince us, you know, and he did. And he brought his wholeness to us, even when we were not seeking it. And that's a beautiful picture, I think, to remember. This is what the second advent is about. You know, first one was about hope. There is a solution. The second one is God, how he brings a solution through peace. And we would just like to whet your appetites for the next Sunday, where we will talk about what the next Advent is, which we'll reveal. But that's our little talk for today, our little devotional. Do we have another song, Silas? No, that's it.